It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running for this 14th day of May, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That, of course, is also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live Monday through Friday from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all times in between and on either end. What time it is while you're listening to the podcast, that part, well, I'm clueless. Regardless, welcome, and if you'd like to be part of the aforesaid merry, wacky, zany, etc., then go to HeadOn.live, click on chat room. If you've never done it before, pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in. You'll be immediately greeted by the likes of House of Roberts and Otto DeShot, and Squeaky and Anatole, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has of course folded space to become Man Cave. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday. Never mind what the Podbean listing said yesterday. The whole can't remember what day it is thing finally got to me last night. Yeah, and when I went to upload to Podbean, I for some reason or another was trying to hurry the week along, and I turned yesterday's podcast into Thorn in the Side Thursday when it was actually Prayer Meeting Wednesday from the empty cathedral. apparently that's a thing now. Not being exactly sure what day it is. I mean, of all the people who should know what day it is, I should, because, you know, the schedule really hasn't changed that much during the Trump pandemic, Monday through Friday and all that. Still, I screwed up, so I got to figure out what I'm going to call this evening's podcast on the upload for Podbean, and my apologies. I can't really call it Prayer Meeting Wednesday because, no. Oh, well. We'll sort that. If that's as much of a problem as I have for the rest of the evening, I'll put that in the W column. There's no doubt about it. And so every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, including but not limited to this program. And so thanks go out to Matt in San Francisco, to Paul. Thank you, Paul, and thank you to Ralphs. Those are our three subscribers for the 14th day of the month over at PayPal. And thanks to the challenge that was put on the table late in yesterday's program. Thanks to that, the fundraising goal for this evening is only $100. Just $100. And, you know, 10 at 10, 5 at 20, 20 at 5, what have you. It's just $100. And so, consequently, that's reachable, and the week itself is wiped out with $300. But, yeah, this really is Thursday. Yesterday wasn't. That's a nice idea. Ralphs says maybe thorn and a half Thursday. Oh, I know. Lee in New York says everyone has the days merged and scrambled. It's not just you. Yeah, I know. Lee, it feels like I'm the one person in the world that shouldn't have that problem because the schedule hasn't changed. But I think it does. The whole there's some cognitive thingamajig that is messing with our noggins. And I wanted to share a couple of notes with you to get this program started. Matt, one of our subscribers for the 14th day of the month, who is, along with his husband, an essential worker, took the time to put together something that I found most profound and most helpful. And in many ways, it's past mere factuality and goes into a philosophical realm of both fear and beauty. The email from Matt in San Francisco is titled "Suggestions on Surviving a Pandemic with a Republican at the Helm." And Matt writes, "As people grow weary of sheltering in place as this pandemic continues, I thought regular folks might benefit from hearing from a queer who survived the last global pandemic while a Republican president was in charge. For me, it was AIDS, and the man of the hour was Reagan, you know, old 666 himself, Ronald Wilson Reagan. One of the first things we learned was he didn't give a shit whether we lived or died. In fact, I suspect the preference was for the latter. Once you really understand and accept that in your core, it strengthens you and prepares you for a fight against a virus that will stalk you for perhaps the rest of your life. Next, mobilize. Educate yourself and your community. Become a ferocious reader, a voracious reader of everything virus-related. How the infection spreads. What can you do to mitigate the risks? What personal behaviors must you change in order to stay alive? Be prepared to really commit to changing your behavior for the long term. I didn't realize back then that the safe sex thing would stretch out to multiple decades, but that's the thing about a virus. It's always out there, stalking you. It just needs you to let your guard down once. If I can wrap up Willie every time for 40 years, you can wear a mask to Costco. We formed our own organizations and resources to educate our community in order to stay alive. We lobbied leaders, formed unlikely partnerships, made the powers that be uncomfortable, and insisted on moving things forward. We pushed for a vaccine. Be mindful that just because you want a vaccine doesn't mean one can be developed in a year, or a decade, or four decades. Be prepared for the possibility that a vaccine may not come along in your lifetime, even if it is a long lifetime. Be prepared for people in your own community to grow weary of being ever vigilant. For my community, it took on some strange trends. One was bug chasers, men who were tired of the constant worry, tired of the vigilance, just tired, so tired. So they would organize parties where people without and people with the virus would engage in unsafe activities with the end goal being zero converting, meaning the ones without the virus would intentionally get infected, and then at least they regained a sense of control. I didn't understand it then. I don't get it now. But that's how some people react. If you know that about human behavior, it makes it easier to accept it as part of some people's journey. Know that people close to you will die of the virus. By age 30, I had been to more funerals than my grandparents had. A deadly virus ravages a community. That is by design. The virus will mutate and become stronger, more cunning. It wants to stay alive as much as you do. Also know that if people come together and support each other, they can do amazing things and help each other long term, help each other survive. Although the fight may be very long, along the way you will be amazed at what people can do when they focus all on the same goal. You will see amazing compassion, beautiful spirits, courageous people doing incredible things. Sit back and take it all in. Marvel at the resilience of the human spirit. And know that through it all, the only thing that matters is love. I think now you know why I was so moved by what Matt wrote. There are so many truths contained in the body of Matt's note. When he says mobilize, educate yourself in your community, it reminded me of something that I was taught learning to be an activist eons ago now. And that is that there are two words that end in I-Z-E that are in play in any moment of potential crisis. And those two words are organize and mobilize. And Matt used the word, based on his experience, mobilize in perfect context. Because organizing is something you do when there is a long-term goal and you want to get people, get as many people singing off the same page of the hymnal as possible. Mobilizing, however, is what you do when the threat is at your door. You can do both at the same time, but when the threat is grave and immediate, you must mobilize. And I remember in the mid '80s when people began taking when what was then called AIDS, we now refer to as HIV, had begun finding its way into the straight community. I remember a motto that went around at the time: "Wrap that rascal." And it's the same thing that Matt says here. If I can wrap up Willie every time for 40 years, you can wear a mask to Costco. And that goes to some of the pissy whining and moaning that has attended this Trump pandemic. Oh, my mask is hot. Oh, my mask is uncomfortable. I saw one guy complaining that a mask almost made his wife pass out. Oh, God. Well, you know, you can pass out, or you can hoover up a few thousand virus particles and pass away. It's along the lines of what Jack in Shreveport said: 6 feet apart or 6 feet under. Which is worse, passing out or passing away? You pick. I think Matt is spot on talking about a vaccine. because you'd think we would probably have an HIV vaccine by now, wouldn't you? And oddly enough, when Matt says that we lobbied leaders, formed unlikely partnerships, and made the powers that be uncomfortable and insisted on moving things forward, we pushed for a vaccine. Lo and behold, the very same person had to be lobbied and pushed back then as we're having to lobby and push now. And that, of course, is Dr. Anthony Fauci. He truly and sincerely didn't get it back in the 80s. He'd only been in his job since 1984. And when AIDS, HIV started ravaging the world, he wanted to just sort of amble along in the same sort of glacial process that had obtained when there wasn't a pandemic stalking the land. And in those days, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, that was when the protests that featured the chant, "We're here, we're queer, get over it," really became a thing. And it was that relentless pressure on Dr. Anthony Fauci that began to finally make a difference in the way the federal government addressed that virus. And of course, Matt is so correct, so absolutely right when he says, "Be prepared for people in your own community to grow weary of being ever vigilant." And that also has echoes in the origins of the United States. What is it? The price of freedom is eternal vigilance? Look what happened to us when we decided we were tired of being eternally vigilant. That's how you get people like Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. Both Bushes, and God knows, this jiggling adipose wad of fears and insecurities and petty jealousies and hatreds. It's also how you wind up getting the virus, by making mistakes, by letting down your guard. And apparently the bug chasers have already appeared in society with regard to the Trump pandemic, because people have been deliberately trying to get the Rona in the false and ignorant belief that there can be herd immunity without a vaccine. Because, see, people don't live to be 900 years old like the Bible said Methuselah did. No. And people are constantly being born. And you can't convey herd immunity to a newborn. You just have to protect the new ones. So much for that. Matt, I cannot thank you enough for that note. Considered fact-rich, and filled with a great deal of heart, hard won. Thank you, Matt. Thank you. Kurt Eichenwald, David in South Carolina, Stan reminds us, said SARS was a global viral emergency that began killing in 2002. How long did it take for a vaccine to be developed? I'll get back to you, Kurt Eichenwald says. They're still working on it. in many ways, we being primates prone to being panicky, the promise of a virus very quickly, really quickly, it'll be nothing but embers by the fall, and we'll stomp them out, any embers, because we've raked the forest. Is the promise that if we're all good little girls and boys, Santa will come and visit us in December and bring us lots of goodies, as opposed to as opposed to bundles of thorns and lumps of coal. And we all know what that work, that's just a means of mommies and daddies trying to exert some less than obvious control over children behaving in ways that children traditionally behave. 900 years, says James in Illinois. That only seems that way these last 4 years. Yeah, and it, somehow or another, we lucked out to be alive at a time when you don't get Methuselah or Noah, but instead you get, well, President Lysol von Syphilis. Steve in New York, subject line, masks and condoms. The fundamental thing is this, and why maggots and conservatives and Republicans get it so wrong. Wearing a mask or a condom is not about protecting oneself, it is about protecting others. Yeah, that's a message that's having a damned hard time getting through to people. But we're, I mean, even here in almost level West by Cold Trump Ginyistan, I'm almost seeing as maybe in some occasions more people with masks than without. So they're learning, one hopes. Anti-vaxxer logic, Megan asks, do these same people run out to catch Ebola for herd immunity too?
Well, you know, that Ebola, that only applies to those people, right?
And we've got an update from Dave, who is dealing with the Rona even as we speak. And Dave says, do not give up. Keep fighting. Never give up. Never surrender. I'm slowly recovering, Dave says. I'm still coughing up a lot of phlegm, and breathing can be difficult at times, but I want the Horn Family Community Congregation to know I'm doing I'm doing way better. They're going to help me find another place to live. I've got enough money that I can make a move happen, but I need some place where I'm not going to get eaten up by bed bugs or threatened by idiots. I have to give credit where credit is due. My representative currently is a man named Justin Moed, a Democrat, who called me personally when he found out that I needed help, and he helped make the arrangements for me to get into quarantine here with the health department. I'm thankful he did. As far as Mike Brown and his ilk, Brown, I don't know what I'm going to do with that man. Ridicule doesn't seem to work with this asshole, but he'll do anything to protect his Lord and Savior. I'd like to invite him and to go to lunch, and while I'm at it, Mike Pencil Neck Geek, and since they all probably will want to not wear masks, I'm going to require that they sit 8 feet away from me because Republicans are more infectious. Signed, your buddy Dave, recovering, not in the blind, and still full of hope. Thank you, Dave. Thank you for keeping in touch and letting us know how you're getting through all of this. So that's a good place for us to get started. A good thorn, suggests Steve in New York. Dr. Bright seems firmly ensconced in Trump's side. I hope it festers and gets infected. And of course, what Steve's referring to is the hearings had today, in which things got really weird, really fast. Oh, but apparently, just in case you were thinking of vacationing there, down at Morgalardo, you know, the filthy little pile of bricks that passes as a hotel and golf club for the Trump gang down in Florida, Palm Beach. Well, because of the eagerness of white supremacist adjacent illegitimate Florida Governor Ron Monkey Up DeKlantis, who was only elected with the assistance of real, no-kidding Nazis, Morgalardo is going to reopen. And folks, I guess, are the maggots, well, not the serious hardcore maggots. They couldn't afford 15 seconds at Morgalardo, and neither would Clorox Claudius want them there. But Morgalardo is opening up its beach club restaurant come Saturday. It sits separate and apart from the clubhouse. And they want folks to know that, by God, they're gonna practice social distancing. Yeah, sure. Tables and pool loungers will be 6 feet apart to keep in line with social distancing guidelines. And hey, they're also going to follow the social distancing guidelines in the jacuzzi. In the jacuzzi. Social distancing in the jacuzzi. Oh my God. Would you ever? I mean, hot tubs are kind of sketchy anyway. Would you ever get into a jacuzzi at Morgalardo or any property run by the Trumps? One trip into a jacuzzi at a Trump property is probably enough to make it hurt when you pee for the rest of your natural born days. Ew. Just like a one-winged dove makes a sound, sounds like she's singing, ew, baby, ew, said ew. The one-winged dove must have been to a Trump property. Ew. But it was a strange and, of course, maggoty day on Capitol Hill today. As Dr. Bright testified, he apparently had scared the living bejesus out of the loyal maggots because they came loaded for bear. They didn't want to hear what he had to say because he had to say a lot. Dr. Bright, who is, of course, a whistleblower now, had previously warned that the United States faces what he described as the darkest winter this country has ever known in living memory. If we continue to fuck up the response to the Rona. Darkest winter in modern history. These are from his prepared remarks for his appearance today. Our window of opportunity is closing. If we fail to develop a national coordinated response based in science, I fear the pandemic will get far worse and be prolonged, causing unprecedented illness and fatalities. Without clear planning and implementation of the steps that I and other experts have outlined, 2020 will be the darkest winter in modern history. And of course, it's his position, Dr. Bright's, that he was shoved out of his job because he refused to sign off on and go along with the ignorance of pushing hydroxychloroquine. Because, well, it killed people. And real scientists and real doctors knew it was going to kill people, even as Clorox Claudius was talking about it as though it were some miracle cure that he was pitching on Jim Baker's program in from Branson, Missouri. Yeah, let's just check in with him.
I want to thank Dr. Bright as well for your service to our country. I have a few questions, and I'm focusing on the hydroxychloroquine. When was the potential use of chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine as treatment for the COVID-19 first brought to your attention, sir?
I believe it's probably mid-March, between March 10th and March 17th, somewhere in that time frame.
And not prior to that?
Not that I recall. The first I heard of the drug itself was a call I received from Dr. Woodcock at the FDA asking if I'd heard of the drug. And I hadn't heard of the drug, and I hadn't heard of its potential use for COVID-19 patients. She said there might be something interesting to look at. And she forwarded a manuscript, and a draft manuscript, and that's the first I learned of the drug itself.
So you weren't aware of any news articles and research papers in January discussing the potential benefits of the drug?
I heard anecdotal stories and reports, sir.
You had?
I can't recall if I did specifically for chloroquine, but I tried to track the media and the scientific journal as well. However, I rely on the guidance of the science within HHS, and the first I had heard of that was from my colleague, Dr. Woodcock, at the FDA, and then a summary report from our scientists at FDA, CDC, NIH, and BARDA that indicated that the evidence for its benefit was weak and the evidence for its safety concerns was stronger. And they did not believe at that point it was something that should be supported.
Okay, now, again, what was your reaction personally? Did you think it was something worth pursuing initially when you heard from Dr. Woodcock?
Initially, I said that I do believe. I trust Dr. Woodcock and her scientific judgment immensely. And if she mentioned that it's something that we should look at, then it's something we should consider testing in a randomized controlled clinical study. I would be supportive of the team reviewing that protocol and that information to see if it should be used.
Sir, you know, I understand, I've heard from experts, and I'm certainly not an expert in this area, that the drug, the one that we're talking about, in this case, hydroxychloroquine, if it's used, first of all, timely, because I understand there's a window there as far as the patient, the efficacy of the drug. Have you heard this, that if it's administered properly, there's a small window there for the patient as far as risk is concerned. Can you elaborate a little bit on that if you've heard that? And again, this is not from from a layperson. This is from an expert.
We have seen heard of anecdotal data from different physicians that they believe they've seen benefit or patient improvement from use of this drug in either combination with antibiotic azithromycin or a combination with zinc or other vitamin C or other things. But there was never sufficient evidence from a randomized controlled study to show its benefit would actually outweigh the potential risk.
Which is a pretty, that's a good benchmark for determining whether something works. Now, bear in mind, the questions being put forward here are coming from Representative Gus Bilirakis, or Bilirakis. He's been a member of the Congress since 2007, and he represents part of a district that is partially in the greater Tampa Bay area. We're talking about Florida's 12th congressional district, and he's a Republican. That's why he's trying to get Dr. Bright to say that somehow or another, hydroxychloroquine was going to be something double plus super wonderful good, because he's carrying water for the most dangerous, ignorant man in America. And by that, of course, I mean Nitwit Nero. But Dr. Bright isn't cooperating. He notes that there was anecdotal evidence, and that anecdotal evidence came from that quack in France who massaged, if you will, the data to make it look like that hydroxychloroquine was something that it wasn't. It was not a controlled study. It never would have met. It wasn't even data. The crap that the doc in France came up with, it was not evidence at all, because it was entirely subjective. You know, if you eliminate all the people you kill with hydroxychloroquine, and then you say we had a 97% success rate, it's not a 97% success rate because you killed people. But the loyal maggots and the Republicans showed up to try to provide cover for the dangerous maniac in the White House. And Dr. Bright was a little too smart to fall for any of that silly shit.
That is why the NIH and probably 40 other institutions around the world are conducting randomized controlled clinical studies to look at the benefit either in late stage treatment or early stage treatment. Most of the data coming out from those clinical studies to date haven't shown an overwhelming level of evidence that it has benefits in those patients. Doesn't mean that it might still have some benefit in individuals or a case or two in different studies, or that physicians believe they see a benefit in their patients. But in the context of a randomized controlled study, we haven't seen an overwhelming level of benefit.
Have you reviewed the studies in other countries such as France and possibly Japan on these? I mean, I just want to know, because my constituents ask these questions. Do you take those studies into consideration when you make these decisions?
We absolutely do. We look at the quality of those studies. We understand, look to see if they were done with the right controls in place and the right sample size. Was it statistically relevant, or was it just a few people, or was it 20 people, or was it 2,000 people? All of that adds to the power of the data itself. Many of the studies that we saw early only included a few number of patients. And so it was unclear, even from the description of some of those studies that were not in peer-reviewed journals, whether all the patients were treated the same, whether they had full participation throughout the clinical study itself. And looking at the statistical power of many of those studies, they were very small. So it's really difficult to understand the impact, the benefit. We also saw a study that the VA hospital conducted with hydroxychloroquine that showed people who were treated with hydroxychloroquine appeared to have a higher rate of death than people who were not treated with hydroxychloroquine.
Oops!
So that study, too, has weaknesses. No study is actually perfect. You take all of that evidence into account when you make a decision on how to further study the drug or how to use that drug.
It's my understanding that not my constituent, but a U.S. citizen, a veteran, was cured. Again, this is just from what I heard from the drug. That was a late stage case, but I've also heard of early stage cases as well. So I wanted to get that on record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, he wanted to get that. He wanted to get that bit of bilious, noxious bullshit on record, because of course the record needs a hearty dose of noxious, bilious horseshit from a loyal maggot. Yeah, and then there was Mark Wayne Mullen. One word. Naturally, Mark Wayne, because Mama couldn't decide if she wanted to name him Mark or wanted to name him Wayne. So they decided that Mama and Daddy decided that they would name him Mark Wayne, because there would be like a unique name. And he wouldn't have to worry about anybody else in his as he growed up and went plumb through the sixth grade, being any other Mark Waynes out there. Of course, it was Oklahoma, so he probably wound up in fourth grade in a class of like six or seven Mark Waynes. And I'm only making fun of his name because Mark Wayne Mullen, well, Mark Wayne Mullen is what you'd call...
You dick!
Precisely, Professor Spicoli. Mark Wayne Mullen got 5 minutes to question Dr. Bright, trained scientist, about the coronavirus, about the pandemic, which is, of course, his area of specialty. And what did he do, old Mark Wayne? Well, to give you an idea, Mark Wayne has apparently joined the same fraternity founded by Jim Shorts Jordan. Because old Mark Wayne couldn't stand to have a sport coat on. He had himself his official Jim Shorts Jordan white dress shirt and a necktie and no jacket, you know, because them slutty women keeps running around and not wearing dresses like the Lord commands in the second chapter of Flip-Floppians. I wish I was kidding. So instead of asking him about the actual area of his expertise, he instead screamed and carried on at Dr. Bright about whether or not he had high blood pressure. And why the hell he wasn't at work? Why ain't you at work if you're so goddamn important? You say you got high blood pressure, sissy. You ain't at work.
If you was so important there and you're a whistleblower and you claim you's tooken out of your job wrongly, why ain't you at work now? Dr. Bright didn't take the bait. He calmly explained and used short little words so that even Mark Wayne could understand. To tell him that he was using his own vacation time to deal with the congressional request for his testimony. Oh, Mark Wayne! What the fuck is wrong with the people in Oklahoma who live in his goddamn district? Why do we even ask? Mark Wayne said, yeah, you can't go to work, but you can show up here and testify to Congress. Well, unlike the maggots, people who love this their country generally respond when asked to testify before Congress. Sometimes they don't even have to be subpoenaed, and they show up if they're just asked nicely. But that wasn't enough for old Rep. Mark Wayne. By the way, in case you're wondering, this brass-bound genius, Mark Wayne, is a former plumber who got tired of that? Who got tired of that gig, and went on to be a right-wing talk radio host from Oklahoma Stan. He wanted to know how much money was that there Dr. Bright making, and does he really have the high blood pressure? And he openly mocked a scientist who has dedicated his life to the well-being of the country. And so there he was yesterday on Twitter saying, Speaker Pelosi is at it again with her socialist agenda and her $3 trillion partisan wish list. Under her bill, illegal ailerons would get stimulus payments and work authorization for jobs that could be taken by unemployed Americans. Hashtag Pelosi's socialists wish list. Because he wasn't there to learn anything at all about this pandemic. He was there to provide cover for Clorox Claudius. Holy hell. And then there were the questions over masks. And Dr. Bright was fresh out of fucks to give. In the question of the availability of N95 masks for healthcare providers. Democratic representative, also from the Tampa Bay area, Catherine Castor, questioned Dr. Bright. Let me clear this up real quick, because there seems to be confusion. His middle name, that previous maggot, his middle name is not Wayne. His first name is Mark Wayne. So his middle name might be Joe Bob. Mark Wayne Joe Bob Mullen. Or maybe Mark Wayne Jim Jed. Just so we're clear on that.
because James in Illinois says, middle name Wayne. Does he have a middle name? Are you familiar with the prevalence of murderers, serial murders, and rapists with the middle name Wayne? It, by the way, my cousin down south named both of her sons middle named Wayne. Neither is a murderer or a rapist that I know of. They're good kids. Not plumbers, either. But, you know, consider it, and from when I saw that he was a former plumber, the first thing I thought was, like a Nixon plumber? Because when you're talking about Republicans, there's plumbers, and there's plumbers. Oh, that's funny. Quote of the day coming from Scott in San Diego. This one is from my cousin, he says, Chip Franklin. Every Fox host who speaks the truth either gets shit canned or has to give Lou Dobbs a sponge bath after a Golden Girls marathon. That's worth the cowbell. Flavio wants to know, Mark Twain was taken? Well, those are two words, Flavio. Mark and Twain. In order to have satisfied the needs of Mrs. Mullen, she would have had to name him Mark Twain. One word. And then maybe giving him the middle name, maybe he would have been Mark Twain Aloysius Mullen. Mark Wayne, Caligula Cornpone, yeah, same, says Steve in New York. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, Mark Wayne, is that a sooner version of Shaniqua? Yeah, you know, I think Shaniqua probably has some sort of historical antecedent somewhere. Mark Wayne, well, I guess we're just lucky that she didn't name him Nosmo or Nosmo King. Rednecks. Oh, hey, thank you. Thank you kindly, Jeremy, for getting us started this evening. We got 95 bucks to go to finish the evening. That's awesome. Thank you very kindly. Right, Irish Dave says, Mark, because John was already in use. You know that the Duke, nicknamed for his childhood dog, got his stage surname from his agent, who was from Wayne, New Jersey, which is named for General Mad Anthony Wayne. That New Englander was said by some to be crazy, hence the mad part. Michael Marion Morrison was the Duke's real name. They just couldn't see putting Marion up on the silver screen with him riding heroically across the vast wastes of the Old West upon his trusty steed. How did Mark Wayne ever know he was in trouble when he was a kid? Because, Mark Wayne, you get your little... right over here. You know, it didn't have any force and effect. That was just his first name. When you're a little redneck boy, you only know you're in trouble when you get all your names. Mark Wayne Aloysius Mullen, you get your skinny white ass over here. I'm going to tan your hide. Now I'm all curious to know what Mark Wayne Mullen's full name is. Please let it be Aloysius. Please let it be Aloysius. Please. Or McGillicuddy. McGillicuddy would work. Ooh, that'd be MMM. And maybe Mama would say, get on over here. Mark Wayne McGillicuddy Mullen. It's going to be one of those days, one of those evenings that's kind of tough to get by without the cheap tequila and the swirly straw. I've
done a fairly good job of avoiding it. But, well, as Matt pointed out at the beginning of the program, stress increases over time. We've got a case in point here in a minute or two. Remember, Dr. Rick Bright had been the head of vaccine development until he was shit-canned by the maggots, in part because he wouldn't go along with the hydroxychloroquine bullshit. Yes, yes, Ralphs, Mark Wayne is one word. Mark one. Oh, this is what happens when you let the morons. Yeah. On the other hand, and there's a cowbell available for this. Todd in South Carolina, Stan, suggests it's Mark Wayne, Jim Bob, Cletus Mullen III. The turd. He's a Mark Wayne like his daddy before him was a Mark Wayne like his daddy's daddy before him. They's all Mark Waynes. Hey. But anyway, Dr. Bright made fairly clear what the cost was when this gang of foot pads, cut purses, highwaymen, night stalkers, and thieves got control of the pandemic response.
COVID-19. Dr. Bright, you understood that America would face a shortage of respirators in January. Is that right?
We understood America would face a shortage of N95 respirators for a pandemic response in 2007. And we have exercised and known and evaluated that number almost every year since 2007. It was exercised even as late as early as 2019, August, in Crimson Contagion, that we would need 3.5 billion N95 respirators in our stockpile to protect our healthcare workers from a pandemic response.
And you sounded the alarm repeatedly, but were ignored by the senior leadership at the Department of Health and Human Services. Please explain what steps that you took and the response you received.
We knew going into this pandemic that critical medical equipment would be in short supply. I began getting alerts from industry colleagues in mid and late January, telling me that from an outside view, from the industry view, that the supply chain was diminishing rapidly, telling me that other countries that we relied on to supply many of these masks were blocking export and stopping transfer of those masks to the United States. I learned that China was trying to buy the equipment from the United States producers to have it shipped to China so they could make more. In each of these alerts, and there were dozens of these alerts, I pushed those forward to our leadership in ASPR, to Dr. Cadillac and his senior leadership team. I pushed those warnings to our critical infrastructure protection team. I pushed those warnings to our strategic national stockpile team, who has the responsibility of procuring those medical supplies for our stockpile. In each of those, I was met with indifference, saying they were either too busy, they didn't have a plan, they didn't know who was responsible for procuring those. In some cases, they had a sick child and it would get back to it later in the week. A number of excuses, but never any action. It was weeks after my pushing that finally a survey was sent out to manufacturers or producers of those masks, a 5-page survey, asking producers or companies if they actually made those masks.
In your whistleblower filing, you discuss a February 7th meeting of the department leadership group, at which you urged the department to focus on securing N95 masks. Can you describe what happened at that meeting?
They informed me that they did not believe there was a critical urgency to procure masks. They conducted some surveys, talked to a few hospitals and some companies, and they didn't yet see a critical shortage. And I indicated that we know there will be a critical shortage of these supplies. We need to do something to ramp up production. They indicated if we notice there is a shortage that we will simply change the CDC guidelines to better inform people who should not be wearing those masks, so that would save those masks for our healthcare workers. My response was, I cannot believe you can sit and say that with a straight face.
That was absurd. In fact, it took 3 months from your initial warnings until mid-April for the federal government to invoke its authority under the Defense Production Act to require the production of millions of more N95 masks. And even then, the administration required the production of only 39 million masks, which is far fewer than you and other experts said that we would need. What was the consequence of this three-month delay and inadequate response? Were lives endangered?
Lives were endangered, and I believe lives were lost. And not only that, we were forced to procure these supplies from other countries without the right quality standards. So even our doctors and nurses in the hospitals today are wearing N95 marked masks from other countries that are not providing the sufficient protection that a U.S. standard N95 mask would provide them. Some of those masks are only 30% effective. Therefore, nurses are rushing in the hospitals thinking they're protected, and they're not.
Thank you for your courageous effort.
Gentlewoman's time has expired. A pleasure to recognize our...
Jesus. No wonder. Mark Wine and Gus Bilirakis were so desperate to divert him from what he had to say. China was trying to buy the machinery with which to manufacture the damn things. Wonder if they got away with it. Of course, Eileen in New York City reminds us, ha! He never even admitted that it was Jared's stockpile. It wasn't ours at all. See, that's the problem. He didn't go to Jared. You know, inept people are funny in comedies. But this is real life. And the ineptitude is toxic and terminal. Ron in Raleigh tells me that Mark Wine doesn't have a middle name. Oh, there's a line out there from something. Oh, I know what it's from. It is from James McClure's one-act play, Lone Star, in which Skeeter Fullernoy complains that he never had a middle name. And he says, I never had a middle name, and I think it depressed my ambition. Well, there's a little more background, courtesy of Ron serving as the ad hoc research department this evening on the horn. Mark Wayne is of Cherokee descent. Hard to believe they haven't drummed his dumb ass out of the tribe. He was a mixed martial arts fighter who had 21 matches. His record was 3 wins and 18 losses. 9 of his losses were by knockout, which goes a long way, Ron notes, to explaining his addled demeanor. Mark Wayne, Steve points out, in New York, serves on the Congressional Fertilizer Caucus and the Congressional Chicken Caucus and, oddly, the Native American Caucus vice chair. Wow. Steve says, you'll never convince me that this wasn't intentional. It's too damned organized. The failures with all the PPE. And Crimson Contagion
that exercise that we've discussed that took place in October of last year, even as this disease was probably running rampant through China, based on the timeline we now have. One of the things they found out by running that exercise, Crimson Contagion, was that we were woefully short of genuine N95 masks for healthcare providers. So named because they block 95% of particulates at the 2.5, at the PM 2.5 level. And, you know, that, and we've discussed this in the past, we found out the hard way when we started dealing with the public health crisis in Appalachia that the EPA does not have any standard whatsoever for what are called ultrafines, you know, stuff below PM 2.5. Some European nations do. We don't, because industry has busted its ass to make sure that we don't. Darlene in Connecticut points out there are and have been good imperial administrators. Bright and other witnesses implicated three presidents' administrations. Bright testified that he was calling to bolster up the PPE stockpile since 2007. Right, yes, he said that. That means 2007, W. After that, after January 20th, 2009, Obama, and then after January 20th, 2017, Trump. Darlene says all three are responsible. Of course, Trump will solely blame Obama, but this is so goddamned wrong, sick, and dysfunctional that nothing was ever done to address this in 13 years. I wondered, Darlene, as I heard him say that he had been sounding the alarm. I wonder if that means that nothing was done, or if it means that the need increased as the understanding increased. I don't know. But that's kind of the takeaway I got, too. Randy in PA says, I think it very likely that this was a product of the GigaBlab 8000. Well, what isn't? And speaking, by the way, of blaming Obama, we have a new Blame Obama sighting out there. And, of course, this is no saner than any of his other Blame Obama moments. He's upset, Clorox Claudius is, about the F-35. He sat down with underhand softball pitcher Maria Bartiromo over at Fox Business Radio Rwanda and gave an interview and complained about the supply chain for building America's flying paperweight, the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. He explained, I could tell you hundreds of stories of the stupidity that I've seen. As an example, we make a fighter jet. It's a certain fighter jet. I won't tell you which, but it happens to be the F-35, okay? Because he thinks that makes him sound so clever and cute. And we make parts for this jet all over the world. We make them in Turkey. We make them here. We make them there. We make them in a box. We make them in a fox. We make them on a train. We make them in a rain. Because President Obama and others, I'm not just blaming him, thought it was a wonderful thing. Aren't you so glad I didn't just play you the clip of that? Never mind the fact that the first flight of the F-35 flying paperweight, joint strike paperweight, took place in Oh, 2006. Never mind that the supply chain had been established before before the letting of the contract in 2001. And because capitalism, we wanted to give people an incentive to support this flying paperweight. Because we wanted to sell it all over the planet. Jesus.
Then it's Obama's fault. Because, well, you know. Yeah, he made fun of me one time at the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Who's laughing now, Barack Obama? Kenyan Muslin, you slurper.
Oh, and they had Darcy gave me a heads up on this. They had themselves a freedom protest there in Lansing, Michigan, again, at the state capitol. The maggots showed up. The refugees from a Ted Nugent cosplay convention showed up. One person was arrested because they brought an axe. No one who brought guns were arrested. By God, an axe. Well, that's just too much. Makes me wonder what would have happened if a maggot had shown up carrying a Scottish claymore or a Roman glottis. Or, hey, that most elegant of all bladed weapons, the Japanese katana. Yeah, they would have arrested those people, too. While the folks with the AR-15 just, you know, stood around picking their teeth with their toenail clippings. But it got right wacky in Lansing. Oh, yes, it did. Because, among other things, because maggots, somebody just had to bring, wait for it, a noose. Because what's a protest for freedom without a noose? In particular, it was a naked brunette Barbie hanging by a noose from a Merkin flag.
Are any of you guys like certified in your job? Did you have to go through training and stuff? Me too. Only there's a lot of people at
home. I second that guy over here. Exactly. You own a
And so what happened was, apparently they had not reached consensus in that whole consensus-based decision-making thingy about whether or not it would be appropriate to use a naked brunette Barbie hanging by a noose as an avatar for Governor Gretchen Whitmer to suggest what these maggots wanted to do that with the aforementioned Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And so somebody ran up and tried to take away the maggot's Barbie. And the maggot didn't take too kindly to it again. Mm-mm, no, not at all. Because, you know, when naked brunette Barbie's standing in for Gretchen, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and hanging by a noose are outlawed, only outlaws will have naked brunette Barbies hanging by a noose from an American flag signifying the desire to murder Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. I know, it gets a little complicated after a while, doesn't it? But the protest organizers said they don't condone violent images, and their protest is peaceful. You know, to the extent that you can have a peaceful protest in which people may or may not be packing heat. But you gotta understand these cosplayers. Because there they are, a-larping and smollicking and tossing of each other's hair and rubbing around and playing mumbly peg with each other. Because freedom. Because they ain't free there. They ain't going to be free until they got a chance to LARP and smollick on everybody and swap virus particles so's we can have us some herd immunity. God damn dumbasses, idiots, fools. And hey, homicidal into the bargain. Because of course. Note coming in from Cynthia. As to the flying paperweight, the F-35. Cynthia points out the pilot's helmet for the F-35 costs $400,000 all by itself. Is this plane a good killing machine? I don't know, but what a waste. I'd rather have a vaccine right now instead. Or, you know, if I can have a hamburger today, I will gladly pay you on Tuesday. Right? Sure. $400,000 helmet. And I guess it's a great killing machine, you know, when it works, which it doesn't a lot. Cynthia added earlier, I was downstairs doing dishes when you were talking about Dr. Bright and the dark winter he's predicting. And it occurred to me just how right he is sure to be. See, if the orange shit gibbon stays in office next year, the evil and malignant incompetence will continue. And if Biden wins in November, the orange shit gibbon will sabotage everything, leaving Biden with an even worse mess to clean up. Either way, we're fucked. It is going to be a dark winter. Best prepare for it now. Indeed, but Cynthia, how? What does that mean? How do we prepare for it? I mean, the maggots, they've got it easy. All they got to do is go out and buy another gun and all the ammunition I can find. Now, that won't feed them. It won't bathe them. It won't sanitize their hands. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe the part of the hand that gets the bullet through it, it gets kind of sanitized by the heat, and maybe cauterized. I don't even want to think about that. Do we keep laying in canned goods? I think it's probably a good idea to have, like, I mean, assuming you're not, like, vegan or something, some of that milk that can just sit on the shelf as long as it's unopened. Real milk, not canned milk. Pretty good stuff, really. That'd be a good idea. Lots of rice and beans. Lots of jugged water. But I don't know what preparation looks like. If you've got any ideas, Cynthia, really? Sorry. If you've got any ideas, Cynthia, by all means, share them, please. I mean, we all need gloves. We're all going to be needing masks. We're all going to be needing hand sanitizer. Is the toilet paper supply back to normal yet? Not really. At least not in the toilet paper aisle of my local Wally World. But whether Corona Claudius understands it or not, or likes it or not, this thing's coming back, and it's not going to be little flare-ups here and there. And it's going to go hand in hand with the flu. And so please, this flu season, the minute it starts, please try to get your flu shot. And for those of you over, what, 50? If you've never had a pneumococcal pneumonia vaccine, please get one of those too. Or if it's been more than 5 years since you've had one, ask a healthcare provider or someone at the pharmacy, because they often give them too. Ask if it's time to have a re-up on it. I mean, that qualifies, I think, as being prepared. And they're raising hell about sending children back into schools because, well, we don't have any problems. You know, there's no problems getting, say, first graders to socially distance. Oh, heck no. You know, sure. Jeremy in Vermont points out that helmet, the $400,000 helmet, can do everything but fly the plane. And also, wherever the pilot's looking, they can see as if there were no plane around them at all. I personally have a few friends who work on and fly the F-35 via the Green Mountain Boys. They admit there were issues, and they've mostly been fixed. You know, until the next problem arises. Maybe that's what he means, because how many times has Clorox Claudius talked about, you know, we have an invisible airplane? Maybe it's the fact that that the helmet lets them see as though the plane isn't there. Maybe that's what he's not understanding, because there's so much that he doesn't understand. Randy in PA points out, you don't have to be a prepper to stock 3 months of food, including Mountain House freeze-dried meals, the same as the military in the house. 3 months of water is another matter. You might place a bet on the city water staying on. 3 months of water is a damned lot of water. But not a bad idea to have 15, 20 gallons around at the very least. Yeah, James in Illinois says, imagine taking off and you forgot your helmet. I'm guessing at $400,000, you probably use it to aim and fire your weapons. That turns your sortie into a sightseeing trip. Well, the whole idea of modern aircraft is to reduce the impact of the pilot upon the flight of the aircraft altogether. Eventually, the idea of piloted aircraft will be antiquated. Pilot friend of mine many years ago said that the ultimate goal was to create a plane that would have a pilot in the pilot's seat and a dog seated on the floor next to the pilot. And the pilot's job would be to feed and water the dog, and the dog's job would be to make sure that the pilot never touched any of the controls. Kind of made sense to me at the time. As to those N95 masks, Steve in New York says, the U.S. mask gap stands in stark contrast to what other nations have on hand. The U.S. has one mask for every three Americans. Masks are not supposed to be shared. While Australia has 2.5 masks per resident, and Great Britain boasts 6. With the recent outbreak of the novel H1N1 influenza virus, warned Republican Kay Granger, a Texas Republican, it has become clear that we need to purchase more medical supplies and replenish the strategic national stockpile. That was a while back. Funny, they're not saying that now. How about this to prepare, says Steve in New York. Grow your own food and then can it. Paging Roger, are you there? Well, in some parts of the country, that's a possibility. This has been the weirdest spring we've been through in a long time. we may finally be past the freezing temperatures. The old rule of thumb here was don't plant your garden until after Mother's Day. Well, we're past Mother's Day, but it's still been plenty cold. I'd love to get my garden going again, but there's between the deer and between the deer and the equipment involved, it's just not terribly likely. God, though, I love a fresh tomato and fresh chilies. Yeah. Oh, and hey, Merca, stop worrying about the damn Rona. Just quit it. You got your priorities all mixed up. Just ask Kaylee Maganini. Right? Yeah. Presidential spokes creep. Second runner up to for Miss White Power Barbie. Walking out to the Rose Garden, carrying her mask, but not fucking wearing it. That's because she's got a cross around her neck.
And there's this narrative, continuing narrative, that the White House ignores or disregards science. Could you just sort of give me your take?
A reporter...
Yeah, that's not at all the case. Look, the president has a number of...
A reporter lobbing a softball at her, hard to hear, saying... there's this continuing narrative that the White House ignores science. Would you please respond to that? And White Power Barbie says,
experts, he takes the consultation of each, and then he decides what is best to move forward. The president regularly talks to the doctors. I'll give you an example. Just last week, there was a study that came out, and you know, I said, oh, here's what Dr. Birx is saying, and he said, you know, go ask Dr. Fauci what he thinks too. So he actively seeks the consultation of the medical experts, and all of that's experts on the task force committee, from Dr. Hahn to Birx, Fauci, all of them. But he ultimately makes the decision as to how to move forward. After all, he was elected by the American people to do just that.
Yeah, I mean, except for the elected by the American people part. Still lost the popular vote by 3 million or so votes. That's a lot of votes to lose by.
Is he at odds with Dr. Fauci over this issue of schools?
So on the issue of schools, as he said, they have differing viewpoints. That's clear. The president wants to see those schools reopen and do so safely. Dr. Fauci, I would note he ultimately clarified his testimony on the matter of schools, and he says that school reopening is not tied to vaccines. So Dr. Fauci did clarify that point. But
yeah, the problem was what Dr. Fauci didn't re-clarify was that he said that we should be able to we should be testing children. You know, because there are children, we should be testing children about once every 4 days in every school in the United States. That's part of what threw them into a conniption, because, again, ain't going to happen because Republican maggot death cult.
They definitely have differing opinions on this, and the president noted that himself yesterday. Yes.
Yeah, Fauci's right, and the president's an idiot. That's a difference of opinion, I guess.
Was the White House aware of the warrant for Chairman Burr before it was served?
Okay, that's the Chairman Burr business. What I want to get to is the misplaced priorities part, where Americans don't understand what they really need to be doing. Let's see if we can find it.
Stop that outbreak at its point.
Okay, back up.
Fauci, but based on what you're sharing with me, the president's healthy, the vice president's healthy, and I think that's something all reporters should be celebrating, and the American people as well.
Yeah, there, that. The president's healthy, and the vice president's healthy, and all reporters and the American people should be celebrating that. Well, Kaylee Maganini, you... Harvard failure, you. Man, we got to stop letting these Harvard people get into positions of power and influence. What a fucked up mess they are. There's probably, if we try to run the math on it, and we understand that ciphering is not my strong suit. All Americans should be celebrating that Clorox Claudius and America's closeted vice president are in good health. All Americans. Well, I guess you're after you're dead, you're not an American anymore. But there's more than 80,000 dead Americans who left behind spouses, sons, daughters, cousins, neighbors, friends. So if there's 80,000 dead, it's fair to say that there's probably somewhere around maybe 750,000 Americans who really don't have time to celebrate the good health of Nitwit Nero and Mike Pencil Neck Geek because they're too busy lost in the grief that overwhelms them because of those who they love who are not in good health but who have died or perhaps who are struggling to breathe on a ventilator. And they really, Kaylee Maganini, you clueless twit. You Harvard harpy. No, they're not gonna be able to celebrate the God Emperor's good health. And goodness gracious, there are probably people out there who are thinking, you know, my loved one was actually a far more decent human being than Clorox Claudius is. What kind of loving God took my decent loved one and left that malignant, toxic piece of shit alone? I guess that they're out of 80,000 dead. There's somebody who loves one of those 80,000 dead who might be thinking that. But, well, I'm sure Kaylee Maganini is grateful for the health of Nitwit Nero every day. Because thanks to that, she doesn't have to work. She gets to carry a mask in her hand and walk out and just lie to people for a little while and then turn around and prance and mince across the lawn back into the building and say, well, I'm done for the day. My work here is done. I can't wait till I get to lie to America again tomorrow. Robert in Australia. The president is healthy. Let's dance! Why does that remind me of the scene from Caddyshack? Bob, stop telling us that ciphering's not your strong suit. All right, Lee. All right. Two things, Steve in New York says. That comment about us being happy about Trump and Pence being healthy is right out of the authoritarian playbook. For my law practice, when we're in a position to hire associates, I will expressly tell people that going to any Ivy League school will be immediate disqualification from employment. It's probably wise on your part, Steve. Cynthia responding. Great question, Bob. How do you prepare for it? Yes, get your vaccines. Stock up on what you can and be mentally prepared for the worst. And yes, there will be things you can't prepare for, like losing someone you love. It ain't going to get better soon. Oh, and as for water, perhaps think like a backpacker, too. Have water filters and perhaps the UV pen that sterilizes water. I bought some of this stuff for backpacking but live in earthquake country. It already seemed valuable, with the virus probably even more so. But your question still stands. How do you prepare for this? I don't have all the answers, but important to think about these days. Those are two great suggestions. water filters and the UV pen. And there's another thing out there. It's not good for like mass producing, but there is a portable. It almost looks like a little. A little hydro flask. But the name of it, and this is an unpaid product placement, the name of it is Grail. And I think it's Grayle. And what it does, it's one of the few water purifiers that not only filters out things like Giardia, which is a bacteria that'll make you really sick, it filters out all bacteria, but it also filters, and this matters in a place like West Virginia, heavy metals. So we've got one of those, and Agnes and I have had occasion to be out hiking around the trails in the national park around here, and it gets real hot, and you're out of water, but you don't suddenly all the water you brought with you wasn't enough, and you can take that Grail and use it to filter creek water. And around here, we got a lot of creek water that's got heavy metals in it. But this thing will filter them out. So that's another item that might be worth having. And listen, this may sound superfluous. I don't mean it to. But all kidding about the rot gut tequila and the swirly straw aside, it's probably not a bad idea to have a couple of bottles of hooch around. I don't mean for just, you know, sitting and getting all liquored up, but, you know, as long as it's of sufficient proof as an emergency sanitizer. And then, because, you know, it's not just the flu, it's not just the Rona, people are going to get other things, too. So this might be a good time to run by your local liquor store and pick up a couple of bottles of brown liquor, whether it be brandy or bourbon or canoodly and whiskey or rye or what have you. And if you can, get as local as locally produced raw honey as you can get. And what you want to do is you want to dissolve a significant amount, like in a quart jar, dissolve a significant amount of the raw honey in the brown liquor till it's sweeter than, say, Southern Comfort. And add to that a couple of pieces of stick cinnamon, some zest of lemon, some orange zest if you like that as well, some slices of fresh, raw ginger, and a nice handful of whole cloves. And screw the lid on your mason, and then, you know, screw the lid on your mason jar and set it in the fridge, or nothing's going to go bad in it. Set it in the back of your, one of your cabinets or whatever. And it makes an excellent, throat coat. And it tastes a hell of a lot better than NyQuil. And it will knock your ass out with equal efficacy. That's my little toddy recipe, and it's not a bad idea. You know, maybe have a little wine on hand. Not because you're going to party, but because, well, from time immemorial, things like that have had their own medicinal value. Jeremy says, stop telling us this is meant to be superfluous. It may be to some of us, but by hooch, not to just sit around and get drunk. Okay, you win. I could finish the rest. But the raw local honey part really is helpful. Safe my ass, says Megan. Clorox Claudius is pushing all this so he can get the economy back the way it was before COVID-19, so he can have his little hate rallies again and presumably win re-election in 2020. This virus is something he can't control, and his malignant narcissistic ego can't handle it. He tried throwing out get-well-soon tricks, and when that didn't work, now he's pushing for reopening the country. He's now going to pretend this virus is over and fudge any numbers of people who die of this. He doesn't care who dies, whether they're kids, adults, or the elderly, and I've never wished a president out of office so fast in my life. Well, Megan, I'd submit that that is because you have never lived in a time in which the nation was in as much peril as it now is. I mean, good God, I remember when the dim leader administration tried to get us to all shit our pants in gut-bending fear that a 6-foot-6-inch tall Saudi with a portable dialysis machine was going to reduce our very own local Walmart to a heap of smoke and rubble. And that pales in comparison to this. He can't get gone fast enough. Scott in San Diego. All Americans should celebrate this. I seriously doubt that most folks will even notice when applause turns to lockstep and then turns into a lemming stampede. Well, for as long as we can keep this program on the air, this will be lemming-free radio. Guaranteed. Uh-oh, I done did it. Kaylee Maganini, a Harvard harpy? Really, Bob? The chauvinism on this show. Allow me to one-up you, but diplomatically, stealing from Tracy. Kaylee equals a see you next Tuesday. Thanks, Tracy. That's my prerogative, derogative, Bob. LOL. Well, I needed something that was alliterative with H. Something to go with Harvard, Darlene. I mean, it's no funny to call her a Harvard beat. Harvard hell spawn? How about that? Ivy League ignoramus? I'm learning. So this here being a Thursday, we've got the Green News Report before us. And I thought, well, so let's take a minute and check in with Brad and Desi and see if they can help pull us out of our funk. I'd take the under on that if I were you.
It's Thursday, May 14, 2020.
You don't need us to tell you. The mercury's up, the air is thick, and the sun is baking everything it hits.
Unsurvivable heat projected for decades into the future is already occurring now.
You know, one of the things we've done is created so much we produce. We're the number one producer in the world right now.
Despite crashing oil demand, Trump administration speeding up drilling on public lands. Plus, a new study finds natural gas stoves are a major source of indoor air pollution.
Great. I can't go outdoors. I can't stay indoors. All of those stories and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And the reason why climate change predictions are 20 years out, 30 years out, is because it isn't happening.
Ah, thanks for clearing that up, Rush Limbaugh. I was getting worried. This is your Green News Report.
It's all modeling data. And it's no different than garbage in and garbage out.
I'm gonna soak up the sun.
Okay, Desi Doyen, so you're telling me that if we survive the virus, we may not survive the heat.
Exactly.
Oh, great.
A new study warns that levels of extreme heat and humidity that climate scientists had projected would not arrive for several decades into the future are actually occurring already. The study published in the journal Science Advances found that parts of the Middle East have already hit the maximum temperatures that the human body can survive, the equivalent of a 160-degree heat index. And parts of the U.S. Gulf Coast have also recorded heat index extremes of 125 degrees. The researchers focused on wet bulb temperature. That's a way of measuring moisture and heat in the air. Weather Channel meteorologist Kate Parker explains.
The air's moisture content makes a tremendous difference in how our body reacts to heat. With higher wet bulb temperatures and therefore heat indices, sweat cannot evaporate off of our skin to keep us cool. Heat-related illness kills more Americans than any other weather disaster.
Well, that's cheery.
Meanwhile, despite crashing oil prices, the Trump Bureau of Land Management has announced it is moving full speed ahead with new oil and gas lease sales in New Mexico, including opening up new areas for drilling and mining next to the ancient Native American site Chaco Canyon National Historic Park. The public has only until May 28th to speak up during the very short public comment period online at regulations.gov, but only half of the households on tribal lands have broadband internet access.
Well, let me speak up then. We already have more goddamn oil and gas than we need. We're keeping it in storage on boats offshore because we have nowhere to put it. And now we're drilling for more on public lands next to ancient burial grounds. Genius.
A new study finds that natural gas and propane stoves and appliances are significant contributors to indoor air pollution. UCLA researchers found that after just 1 hour of use, a gas-fired stove or oven raised indoor concentrations of nitrogen dioxide to levels that exceeded national air quality standards for outdoor air, as much as 5 times higher than acceptable limits.
Also great news. So, what happens? Will it make me sick?
Yes. It is related to numerous respiratory ailments. To decrease indoor air pollution, the study proposes that households transition to zero emissions electric appliances. That would reduce healthcare costs and save lives. And I would note that converting all U.S. buildings to all electric appliances would be a massive jobs generator.
Well, that it would.
So yes, it is a bit weird for outdoor air to be less dangerous than indoor air quality for now, as countries have hunkered down during the pandemic to slow the spread of the COVID-19 virus. But here in the United States, vehicle traffic is ticking up again, and right on cue, so is air pollution, as states slowly begin reopening at different speeds. The Houston Chronicle reports that levels of air pollution in Houston have quickly returned to previous levels. But the shutdowns provided scientists with an unprecedented natural experiment for studying global pollution. According to two new studies focused on China, coronavirus shutdowns resulted in a 63% reduction in nitrogen dioxide pollution and a 35% reduction in soot, tiny particles that penetrate deep into the lungs. A third study estimates that the drop in air pollution likely saved more than 10,000 lives in China, more than died from the virus.
Wow.
In Europe, a new analysis found similar benefits. Harmful air pollutants fell by nearly half, and the researchers estimated that avoided 11,000 air pollution-related deaths. So obviously, gains against pollution are temporary, but they do offer us a glimpse of a cleaner future that we could have. But of course, first, you gotta vote for it.
I'm in.
Finally, Sweden has become the third European nation to close its last coal plant, following Belgium and Austria in late April. Here in the United States, Upper Midwest electric company Great River Energy announced that it will close its North Dakota coal plant by 2022 and replace it with clean renewable energy sources, primarily wind power, because it's cheaper.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Blue skies, smiling at me. Nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds singing a song, singing a song. Nothing but blue birds.
Well, I almost got up and started dancing with that. Sure.
Let's see here. All right, this sounds fun. Let's go and check in with Todd in South Carolina, Stan. Hey, Todd.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, how's it going?
You know, hanging in here, hoping for a couple of sunny days. With any luck at all, maybe I'll be smoking something on the new acorn come Sunday.
Wow, that's good news. That's the first I've heard of that.
Well, I've been waiting for, because I don't want to run the risk of putting the thing together and then just because you got to put it together, you got to burn it in. So you need two dry days, and we haven't had those.
Well, yeah, you know, I've been down here since 08, and I mean, we all know it's climate change, but the weather has changed. These houses were not built for the kind of weather we're having. It's been so wet. Most people's houses that face north, it's like this constant mildew issue. Our weather patterns are all, you know, what else is new? It's just everything. yes, I understand. I'm sorry. I'm trying to be upbeat. Yeah. That's good news. That's good news. So what's the first thing you're going to cook?
I haven't decided yet. I'm going to survey the extended family and see who wants what.
That sounds good.
And by the way, Darlene just sent a note and said, so awesome. I was just thinking about Todd. Hey, Todd.
Darlene. People are always thinking about Darlene. Darlene's always got some good input. And hi, Darlene. Yeah, you know, so yeah, I grilled out for the first time. I don't know if I told you, it was maybe a week or two ago, because you know, the spring in the South is amazing before it gets humid and before the bugs come out. You know, it's just wow, really nice. So you know, we have to grill some meat while we can, because you had some really solid advice right before the break. Wow, that was some good advice. Good grief.
It's this community. This is an amazing group. I mean, I the Toddy thing I've talked about. Toddy, talking to Todd. Did they call you Toddy when you were little? But
you know, of course, and it was awful.
still getting over it, right? Still in therapy.
Yes. They're old now. It's work. You know, come on.
But that recipe's an old family thing, and it works, and it's handy to have around.
And if
it turns out you don't use it, you know, you mix a little soda water with it over ice. Nobody's gonna complain.
Well. You know, if people have been listening, there must be something to it, because if you have your certain age and you have your ear to the ground, all these, you know, people stayed healthy on the frontier after trial and error. They figured out what worked and what didn't. And you know, the people's pharmacy is a good way. I mean, some of these folk remedies, if you ever listen to the people's pharmacy on public radio, because, you know, they'll separate the fact from fiction. You know, like Vicks Vapor Rub, that's good to keep around for. It does a lot more than just for you. I don't even use it for the chest. You know, it does amazing things for all over. But what you're talking about, I've heard that before. You know, cloves are medicinal. The honey's absolutely medicinal. You know, the cinnamon is antimicrobial, antiviral. There's a lot to that. Come on.
And don't forget the ginger.
And the ginger, you know, I consume ginger and turmeric almost every day now, only because I'm a big tea drinker, and this ginger turmeric tea, I don't know if anybody else out there drinks it.
Speaking of which, the lady who has the food trailer not far from me and makes that awesome vegan ice cream with coconut milk, she was open again today, and I stopped by to get some ice cream for Agnes, got her the coconut vanilla this time, and ooh. But she was offering an elderberry turmeric tea, iced, of course, and sweetened, and I saw a couple of people, you know, honking on a glass of it. Is it good? They go, oh, it's fabulous. So, and Randy just reminded me, Randy from PA, supposedly elderberry juice is antiviral.
I believe that. I mean, you know, there's a lot we don't, like I said, I mean, this honestly, it's not about me, but I'll be honest with you, man. Before I decided what I really wanted to settle down with, you know, I like substances. So I figured, okay, I'm going to do as much research as I can. So I just, you know, I did a whole lot of reading on natural, biopharmacology. You know, it didn't even have a name then. But, you know, medicinal herbs. And that's why we know. I mean, come on, people knew that, like garlic and onion. We all know that now. But, you know, it was
but the garlic doesn't work out in the toddy, and neither does wild Greek oregano either.
It's a separate issue. But absolutely. But I just mean in general, not for the toddy. I don't want to confuse issues.
But you make me think. Maybe if we're supposed to have good weather tomorrow, maybe fire up the griddle and go get a couple of nice Italian hoagie rolls, slice them lengthwise, and slather them with fresh garlic. And I've got some wild oregano capsules, oil, and just, you know, squirt one of those on there and grill them face down like that for a little bit. Then turn them face up, put some shredded mozzarella across them, put them under the dome. Whoa, that could get real good real quick.
It's already good real quick. People can smell that now. Yes. It's that time of year. And you know, we had to along that vein. I have been thinking about this only because I have to do a lot of cooking around here. And there's one thing I make that no one ever gets tired of, and it's really simple. All you need is like olive oil and cappellini or angel hair and garlic, shallots. If you don't have shallots, you can use onions and good Parmesan cheese. Not the Kraft in the canister.
You could always finely grate some of that wonderful Kerrygold Dubliner instead of Parm.
You can, and that's a very good option. Because that's a very special cheese. But, you know, it's just really simple. And it's basically, you know, and if you have pesto sauce, you can use that. But, you know, you cook your angel hair, cappellini, and then you toss it with sauteed. It's really easy. So you cook your pasta. For people who don't know, you cook the pasta. And then in the pan, you know, you sweat down some garlic and your scallions or onions. Whatever you want. And maybe a little spinach. Spinach is nice, just a little bit. It has some greenery, and it has a nice taste. And then you add your pasta to it, some more olive oil, maybe a little garlic powder and the fresh garlic, because they have a slightly different flavor, and it will add another layer to the flavor. And grind your nice, you know, your salt in there and toss it. And that becomes the base for a nice meal. Now, you can have mushrooms on top of that if you're vegan, or you can have your meat. You can have, you know, a cut of chicken over that. Whatever meat you want, you put it over top. And people will love it. Believe me, I've been doing this for a minute, and it goes over well. So anyway, that had been on my mind because it just was. Anyway. Am I battling?
Not at all.
Okay. Have you had this? Have you had what I'm talking about?
More or less, yeah. Yeah, we do that. We do something like that. Something fairly similar to that fairly regularly. I love the capo d'angeli.
What is that?
Angel hair. That's my favorite pasta. Like I said,
and it doesn't take long to cook, you know.
But my favorite remains the cacio e pepe. You know, the black pepper, olive oil, parm, done. Simple, easy, quick.
Oh, yeah.
Flavor party.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of flavors in there. It's just wonderful. And then, you know, if you have like a breaded chicken cutlet that goes well on top, grilled chicken, you know, whatever, you know, even if you don't eat meat, anything goes on top of that. It's just a nice little meal, you know. And so you're going to be getting out on the grill soon. That is good news.
Oh, you know, please just let us have some decent weather. I mean, we've got a fighting chance at some sunshine tomorrow, high of 76. Saturday and Sunday we get the thunderstorm icon, but that usually means, you know, pop-ups here and there, and maybe it won't be so bad. But, you know, Sunday we finally got a high of 82, so if it'll hold off, you know, it could be a decent day.
Well, that sounds beautiful. And I have a very serious question about this. Was it a Grail? Grail? What was this drinking apparatus?
Grayle.
That sounds necessary. I like that. Okay.
I'm looking to see if I can find them. No, that looks like engine parts.
One of those filters remove heavy metals. Almost none of, even the Berkey, I don't know if Berkey does that. I don't know if they do that. You know, that's a big deal.
Yeah, there it is. Grail water bottle. Oh, it's Grayl. And it's it's thegrail.com. Thegrayl.
Wow, that's some good information.
And, I mean, they're pricey.
You know, well, all right, what do you call pricey? Between 50 and 100?
Yeah, $90.
Damn. For what is it, a liter?
Let me see here. It's the Grail Geo Press. 24 ounces, 710 milliliters.
How long does the filter last? How many fills up do you get?
I'm not sure offhand, because we haven't put it to that much use.
Mm-hmm.
Particulates, silt, microplastics, so activated carbon effectively absorbs chemicals, pesticides, heavy metals, flavors, and odors. Cartridge lifespan rated for 350 cycles, 65 gallons, 250 liters. But the time it takes to press it through increases as the filter ages.
Okay. But that's good, because it lets you know when the filter is saturated.
Yeah.
In a way. You know, that's not, I mean, if you think about, okay, this can keep me alive or not, you know, for two people, $50 a piece, if you want to split it or whatever, or, you know, come on.
Now, the other thing is the replacement cartridges are kind of a, kind of pricey too, like $25 a piece.
Well, so you get a starter kit for less than $150, including delivery. You can get extra filter, and that's something to think about. Hey,
yeah, it's handy to have on hand.
Yeah. You know, when you started talking about Giardia, is that how you pronounce it? I know what it is.
Yeah, Giardia.
Giardia. I remember when I was backpacking in the Adirondacks, and they were like, this was when the acid rain had killed a lot of the lakes up in the Adirondacks, a lot of the places. It was like dead forest, but, you know, you had to be really careful of that. But then, you know, some places you could drink the water. But, you know, I have to ask you this. This has been on my mind. In the midst of everything else that we're dealing with, you know, with the disease and incompetence and this and that, you know, while we talk, the federal courts are being stacked. And so this guy has really done third world shit to our country. He's got the Attorney General. He's got the Treasury Department via Steve Mnuchin. Now he's taking over the intelligence services with the second guy. You already had one guy in there, you know, Fat Boy, excuse me, overweight people. I'm just saying that because, you know, Pompeo is just disgusting. But now this rat.
Yeah, but he did graduate first in his class at West Point.
Yeah, well, Cornwall on Hudson isn't all it's crept up to be, you know. But, you know, this Ratliff guy, they've been recycling judges and other folks who have been rejected before because they had zero experience and were, you know, just not qualified. Now, what is to prevent? We already know how they operate, this particular regime, when he gets full control over our agencies, our intelligence agencies. He's going to use them against any of his enemies.
Sure. That's his theory of governance.
I'm not convinced he's not going to win again. You have to prove to me, because I still stand behind. I got to see us ahead by maybe 17 points before I start to wake up and believe something.
Well, one of the waypoints in it. Look what the Supreme Court did to Wisconsin yesterday.
I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I listened to the show yesterday. I could not believe that dude's language. See, that's what really pissed me off. The people who feed us, they're putting their lives on the line to keep food, you know, distributed. You know, even though maybe some of them aren't from here, that's even more reason why you should protect them. They're here working for you, us, and themselves. That's American. And he says, well, they're not real people, or they don't really matter. Those aren't
regular people.
Regular. So what is a regular person?
White.
What is that?
White.
Okay.
Surprised you didn't know that. I mean, don't you speak dog whistle, Todd?
You know, I don't know,
but,
man.
But the larger point I was getting at is they forced people to go out to vote to throw out that one no good piece of shit on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And by the way, he was part of that decision yesterday. That was his way of getting back at Wisconsin for daring to throw his sorry ass out of office.
Vindictiveness.
Yeah. Okay. So Wisconsin, which is a battleground state, a swing state, is people in Wisconsin are going to have to make a choice. We know already that 67 people have the Rona because they were forced to go and vote in person. And consequently, I don't know what I would do if I lived in Wisconsin. It feels like a patriotic imperative, but it also feels like a kamikaze mission. In November, when this country will be burning up with flu and COVID, Wisconsinians are going to have to stand in line, LARPing and smolicking all over each other and tossing of each other's hairs and rubbing up against each other to go and vote that miserable bastard out. And see, what they're counting on in the White House is that the maggots will die for him. They will gladly die for him, and they'll go vote in Wisconsin, and the sissy panty waist liberals won't. And that's how he plans to win Wisconsin.
Really? You think that he views his supporters as expendable pawns in the voting game?
Cannon fodder, corona fodder, COVID fodder.
Well, you know, it's funny you brought this up because that has been ever since this. You know, honestly, it's hard to process. Please don't let me get too far off topic. Remember, I really like history. That we are living through a rich time in history, not just American history, but world history. In terms of, there is a shift in the political science sense, it seems, in terms of this rise in populism and fascism and neo-fascist, and just the way that leaders are conducting themselves at the same time that we have this pandemic, and we have the leader of the world, us, were unstable. What would happen? This is just crazy. And the MAGAs don't even see that. It's so ironic. They think that their moron in charge is keeping us safe, when in fact we are being weakened. I mean, that's just
we're being fucking killed. I mean, can we just be that stark about it?
Well, it seems I'm worried about this opening up shit. I mean, this doesn't look good. This thing has not gone around the world again yet, if you know what I mean.
I do.
So this is going to blaze. You know, anecdotal evidence sometimes turns into empirical evidence. You just have to collect the data in the right way and then follow up. But keep track of what's going on and have good supervisors, because you have some crappy people on the front line who don't care, and you got to get rid of them. You know, you're not paying them just to check boxes and do whatever. That's no good. And that goes for people and tests, like physical testing for, diseases and whatnot. It's they're different. One is human, one is inanimate, but it's the same dynamic. You know, if it's not doing the right thing, you don't need it, because it's just messing up the data. You know, it's like saying, Bob, me and you and some other people, we're going to build this house for Habitat. You all have rulers, right? You have a ruler, right? Yeah.
Got me a ruler.
Right. Well, and, you know, my ruler is 11.2 inches long, you know, American. But everybody's ruler is different, but we all call them rulers. You know, they're all tests. What does it really mean, though? Different states using different tests. We don't even know enough about these tests. And it's really sad, but we have to start at the end. We have to start with these deceased people.
Well, and what you're talking about is demonstrably true, Todd, because just today, of course, Clorox Claudius declared, and I'm not kidding, I wish I was, he said, you know, if we didn't do any testing, we would have very few cases.
I don't know.
He went to Allentown, Pennsylvania today. And he told the people who had to be there at the factory that he visited, and he said, it could be that testing's, frankly, overrated. When you test, you have a case. When you test, you find something's wrong with people. If we didn't do any testing, we'd have very few cases.
Okay.
And therein lies, their strategy. He said the quiet. He said the quiet part out loud. They're trying not to test.
They're getting
cooperation from places like Texas and Florida in suppressing the information about who is dying of it. And ta-da.
See, I didn't know that part. Oh my God! This is these people, because of their ideology, they're going to kill us all.
Not all of us. They only want to kill the undesirables. You know, people with IQs bigger than their shoe sizes. IQs IQs that are a bigger number than the temperature at which water freezes.
Oh God.
Yeah, and by the way, a bunch of notes coming in since you came on. Cynthia says, "Way cool. I haven't used the Grail lately and forgot what it was until I looked at the box." And Cynthia says, "Yeah, I got one too, and it works great."
Uh oh.
So that's the Grail, thegrail.com. She said, I bought it as a handy filter to have while hiking. And yeah, it works great. Meanwhile, Kyle is upset at me again. I'm sorry, Kyle. Kyle says, damn it, Bob, quit making me scream at the dinner table talking about how Pompeo graduated first in his class. Elbert in Rhode Island, meanwhile, says, I think Trump's handling of the pandemic is going to either drive him totally batshit crazy or else it will antagonize so many people that he'll lose by a landslide. Under ordinary circumstances, I would tend to agree, but these fuckers are already spending north of $20 million to suppress votes in swing states. That's a fact. As to garlic powder, Ron in Raleigh has a tip for you. Because Todd lives in a humid area, and garlic powder tends to clump when it's humid. Store your garlic powder in the freezer. It works with onion powder as well. I thought he was going to say put a few grains of rice in there. But freezer probably,
me too.
Freezer probably works better.
Thanks, Ron.
Randy says Life straws, where water purification is concerned, are cheaper. But I don't know if... I did my research a while back, and the reason I got the Grail was because it does heavy metals. Life straws...
That's the deal.
Life straws, I know, will do bacterials and silt and shit like that. I don't know if they do heavy metals. Let's see here. By the way, Darlene wants to know basics for health. Expeller-pressed or cold-pressed olive oil? What's better? I've always gone with cold-pressed myself.
Yes, I agree. And you know, I think it depends, like how much do you cook? What do you cook? Because anything that you're going to put, and you and your guests are going to, like, put directly in their mouth, like we were talking about with the toss, Catalina Angel here, you want to use the best olive oil you can afford for that.
Yeah, but see, I never use any extra virgin olive oil with much in the way of heat. I use extra virgin olive oil when I want olive oil flavor or to toss things in or whatever.
But like a cold salad with the black olives and the pasta.
But I, if I'm going to cook with olive oil, I use the lighter stuff because it tends not to have that. It tends not to have its flavor profile changed by heat. No olive oil can take like fried chicken temperatures.
Oh, no. Exactly. No, we're not talking about that. That's why I said, like sweat. When there's ways to saute and they're sweating, kind of. You know, you don't want it to smoke. You want to release. You want to just get, I mean, this is the way I do mine. I just get that, the good olive oil warm enough with the garlic and the shallots until you smell it. It's not burning. It's not smoking. It's just having, and you must put some salt in it because that draws out the essential oils. And then, you know, you'll smell it, and then it'll be like an infused oil. I know what you're saying though, because if it's too hot, it's like coffee. If it's too hot, or tea. If the water's too hot, you're going to ruin the flavor.
It's going to burn.
It's going to burn. And then there's no point in spending, you know, $12 for a quart when, you know, right. But yes, I see your point about the coldness. You know, I think we talked about that before. There's different oils for different applications, I would think. I mean, some people just use olive oil for everything, I guess, if they have money like that. I mean, at one point I did because it was cheap. You could get, in Philly, man, you get a 101 ounce can of cold-pressed virgin olive oil from ShopRite. I bet you Clarence knows ShopRite. ShopRite is the shit. They had this can sale. I mean, ShopRite is a great supermarket. I mean, it's stuff straight from Italy. Like, and it was 10. I mean, this went on for years. Like $10 for 101 ounces of really, really good olive oil. All this food talk. Did you have any more messages to
people,
read?
People expect that of us. We do the food porn thing. By the way, Jeremy in Vermont says, hey, Todd, don't worry about babbling. You're good. Bob does it for 3 hours a night, and it keeps us all sane. Well, talk about fainting with damn praise. I can't get a break around here. Bob, stop telling us how you can't get a break around here.
You didn't give yourself a cowbell, man. That was a compliment. I mean, that means wait. You're like the addicted pill head says he can do anything with one half of his brain tied behind his back. Hey, man, I really want to talk about him one day because I'm like you. I don't know about anybody else, but sometimes it freshens up your brain when you listen to the local AM radio just to see what your neighbors and everybody else are talking about. And there's nothing but right wing and religious and Mexican music, which is cool because it's kind of different. But Rush Limbaugh just fucking, how does he get away with just lying like that? I mean, people listen to him. People follow
because
him.
We have because, Todd, we have a fetishized approach to the First Amendment, and he claims a constitutional right to lie as long as he's getting paid to do it.
I mean, when I say lie, I don't mean bending the truth.
Up is down, left is right, pink is blue. Yep.
I had to cut that shit off after. I mean, I can listen to almost anything, but I had to cut his shit off. I'm like, it's too much. I feel like it's going to poison my system. Oh my God.
But a capitalist system will create a capitalist constitutional right to lie, and they'll say something like, And every time he gets caught doing something really shitty, like calling Sandra Fluck a slut, remember that?
Yeah, of course.
My friends, I'm just an entertainer, and that's always his fallback. Same with Fox News, TV, Radio Rwanda. They're not really a news network; they're just entertainment. So you know that.
And you know, I don't know about you, but in the way. Well, it's all everybody who's paying attention. You know, this president follows the worst of the worst because he doesn't know anything. The people that he follows, when I say follow, the people he listens to because he doesn't read, you know, Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, these other, and then the crazy people like Alex Jones.
Reading, like in the toilet?
This is the president. I mean, you know, that stuff is like a comic book. It's fun to listen to, and then you turn it off, and then you get back to business. You know, it's just so irritating. Okay.
Well, you got a note from Lady B, going back to us talking about Kaylee Maganinny. But Bob,
Picaninny.
No, Maganinny. Now quit that.
Oh,
Kaylee Maganinny. But Bob, she was on her high school forensics team. She persuaded mom and dad to let her take her boyfriend, Frederick McWhitey, along on the family camping trip. You're just a hater of successful white women. Woman hater! Wait a minute. And by the way, Lady B says, sorry, I was behind. I'm all caught up now. Hey, Todd.
What's up, Lady B? I'm like losing my stuff over the McWhitey. That's just too fuck. That's just too much. That says it all. That's a mouthful. You know who that is. You know, we all know that guy.
Yeah,
right?
Frederick McWhitey. Yep.
Oh my God. Okay, I have to stop saying it. By the way, but listen,
cousin, and he is cousin of William McPastyface.
Yeah. That's his older cousin. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Can't be out in the light much.
He's got the jowls.
And he burns real easy, Todd.
He can't stand them browns.
I mean, see, he could never ride in Tracy's white Subaru Karen with the sunroof out because he'd spontaneously combust.
Did you hear how
I mean, he'd have third degree burns after 15 minutes on the 6 7/8.
Tracy would have had to drop him off at the hospital at the melanoma unit. He needs attention immediately. Oh God.
Paging Dr. Howard, Dr. Fine, Dr. Howard, emergency, come right away. Yeah, see, Jeremy in Vermont's where you are. Jeremy says, I used to waste time with right-wing talk for fun, but then the magic of Facebook came around, and I get all I can take from reading people passing on articles from Daily Caller. which was started by that great personality, Fucker Carlson. I'm getting mad just thinking about it. Breathe, Jeremy. Breathe. Jeremy, I want you to go to your happy place. I want you to look deep inside yourself, and I want you to take a deep breath in through your nose.
Breathe.
Out through your mouth. Breathe. Letting go now, Jeremy.
Not too much patchouli.
Letting
there,
go. No. Letting everything go and quit huffing the patchouli. Yes, just like Todd said.
Now, it goes on the light bulb. You put a little bit on the tissue and you put it on the light bulb, because what happens is that as the light bulb warms, it will smoke a little bit. And you won't have any smoke, but it'll be essence in the air. And Lady B knows that. That was in the seminar.
Yeah, that was really. Okay. That's the hippie seminar. Is that what that was?
Yep. Yeah. You got it. Yep. Yeah.
And by the way, Ron in Raleigh says, "Could you tell me how long does it take for stage 4 lung cancer to kill somebody? Not quickly enough for me," says Ron in Raleigh.
He's probably
the ultimate crisis actor. He's got that curable stage 4 lung cancer.
That fucker looks better now than he did last year. He probably just stopped eating that nasty ass food.
Well, that's a load. Rush Limbaugh looking better than anything is a low damn bar. I mean, Rush Limbaugh looks better than a baboon's ass. I mean, Rush Limbaugh looks better than freshly barbecued warthog rectum. Come on. And there went dinner in the Mountain Time Zone. I thought we were going to make it all the way through the program.
Rush Limbaugh loves some warthog chitlins.
Hoo-wee!
Okay.
Maybe a little poached carp along the way. Sure, why not?
Oh my God. Well, I mean, you know what? I saw this Bojangles thing online, and I couldn't bring myself to go. That damn new sandwich they had looked so good. I went out and got chicken tenders. By the way, there's no meat in this motherfucker, man. You almost have to hit a motherfucker in the head to get near the damn meat. I mean, it's just, I wouldn't do that.
Well, wait. Apparently Kyle was dining late here in the Eastern or perhaps Central time zone. Fuck it, Bob. I was trying to eat, but so much for that. So, Kyle, either eat before the program or after the program. I would think you would have been hip to this by now.
You know, the sphincter is the best part.
Because it's more chewier.
It's like that overcooked calamari that you love in the restaurant.
Yeah, goddamn, you chew on it once, and the reverb off it just keeps your teeth going for the next 5 minutes. One good chomp.
Just like Al Sharpton's teeth in Spencer's Gifts in 1978.
Oh, wait a minute. You did not.
I said, that was terrible. I apologize, man. That just came out. That's awful. That's not nice.
That's cold.
I mean that in a loving way.
Of course you do.
All right, speaking of Reverend Al, you know what? Maybe this is a wake-up time, wake-up call that we should not be required. Think about it, man. Think about how many people, if you don't live in a certain type of neighborhood. A lot of people have to wait. If you really want to vote, you have to wait. Every year we see this footage of people waiting 5 hours in line. What if you're a single mother and you have to pick up the kids from daycare? Maybe not. You're not sure, because then you get that call. It's 10 minutes to 6. You better come get your kids, because after 6, you know, if you don't get here by 6:15, I'm calling DHS, blah, blah, blah. And you got to worry about standing in line, going to the bathroom. So what is wrong with a mixture, maybe, of, we're supposed to have technology, a mail-in ballot, and you can show up to vote if you want. But what about just a drop-off box? Because in most, well, at least on the East Coast, I never lived on the West Coast.
Really? You're going to trust a drop-off box in a world that has maggots in it?
Well, with security, heightened security. I don't know. We have to figure something out. This is not working. You can't have people. I have a bad feeling, man, that this thing is going to come back and just ruin. We're going to have people in the, we're not going to have any hospital space.
No, I think that's the plan.
What do you mean that's the plan?
By the time cold weather comes, and this thing catches fire again, or just keeps burning, as is more likely the case. The only places that'll be reporting it are sane states like New York and Massachusetts, California, Washington, Oregon, Michigan, Minnesota, maybe Wisconsin if the legislature lets them. But it won't even be mentioned. When Kaylee McEnany steps to the microphone, you got a COVID update for us, Kaylee? What the hell's COVID? Huh? What are you talking about? He cured it. Donald Trump cured the COVID. Everybody out there dying of something else. It's the flu. That's what it is. Flu.
You're scaring me.
Well, I mean, you want me to bullshit you?
No, but that could work because this is what they already are doing.
They're already doing it in Florida. They're already doing it in Texas. They're suppressing the data. Oh, and by the way, we have irritated Lady B a little bit. Subject line: Lady B knows this. I am not a hippie, goddammit, I angrily muttered, stirring my kombucha tea. Just kidding. I'm drinking Pepsi and waiting for this high to kick in like a mug. Taunting again.
Hell yeah.
Legal weed taunting woman.
You know, I get teased by my friends all day. They're like, well, they would come to see you, but... Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I don't blame you.
Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh wants me to stop telling us when to eat, and Jeremy says Jeremy wants you and me to stop telling him how to relax. Want to?
No, this is good. Breathe.
And see what I was talking about. You know, COVID. What COVID? Kyle in Kentucky, Stan, who should know. I mean, he just like you live in South Carolina, Stan. You know among whom you live. Kyle says, the dumb fucks would fall for that bullshit, too, goddammit. Yes!
Yeah! They're already falling. Do you understand?
Breathe. Let him go now. Todd. All better, right?
Welcome to Fireside Chat. All right.
Welcome to Carousel.
Man, I can't. Well, first of all, this food. Now I can't stop thinking about the angel here.
And see, I just got a link that goes hand in hand with what you said earlier. Just got a link from CNN from Brother Deacon Asa, who says It pains me deeply to say this, but this pig fucker is going to slither in again. There will be no Biden landslide. CNN poll, Biden tops Trump nationwide, but battlegrounds tilt Trump.
Well, I mean, I'm just basing my prediction on my just total letdowns at this. I'm halfway done with my life. I won't live to be 100. And... You know, we all know that an incumbent, you know, that's a big boost there. And the people who vote for, like, Trump people and all that, their vote, because of where they live, because of our court system and the Electoral College, their vote counts more than our votes. That's just the way it is. And they're making sure that stays the same way while they pack these courts and pack the intelligence agencies and get rid of intellectuals and get rid of good data. You know, this is a concerted effort. This is like a multi-level, multi-prong approach. This is the clean out. They are cleaning out. And that fucking Chuck, we haven't talked. Oh, let me tell you something. Bill Barr needs to be not only arrested, that motherfucker needs to stand and be flogged.
He's easy there. We don't have any flogging sentences in this country. So unless you could somehow get him to chew gum in public in Singapore, that's going to be out.
Right. You know what? That was that play that I saw. That's right. You know, people are doing the best they can. It was some play up in the country. That's what it was. Yes. Mr. Barr here
needs to be arrested. Held without bond, tried, and convicted, and sentenced.
That chuckle, you see, now he gave away, he's a fucking lawyer. That was not fucking funny. And
I liked, him a hell of a lot better back in the 90s when he was saying, Bud, Wise,
Well, let me ask you this. I don't think that, Chuck Todd got some pushback for editing a tape. But, you know, all the editing in the world is not going to erase what our attorney general said.
I got a feeling he's having a couple of bad days because I was glad when you mentioned his name, which is kind of weird. Because toward the end of the evening last night, I didn't get to it, but a story emerged that sparked a little glimmer of hope in that last little corner of my being that still has a subatomic particle of optimism.
That little bright spot that you covet and you got to keep it protected.
Oh yeah, you take it out and you hold it very gently and you pet its little head. Because Judge Emmett Sullivan, who recall, looked at Michael Flynn and said, "You're goddamn lucky you're not being tried for treason, you fuck."
Right.
Not so many words. Well, he called for friend of the court briefs and people to opine as to whether what Bill Barr to prosecution, Attorney General Pepe the Frog, otherwise known, was legal or ethical or slimy and criminal. And as part of that, well, a few days before in the Washington Post, a retired U.S. federal judge from the Southern District of New York by the name of John Gleason had penned an op-ed for the Washington Post, and he said, The Justice Department's move to dismiss the prosecution of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn does not need to be the end of the case, and it shouldn't be. The Justice Department has made conflicting statements to the federal judge overseeing the case, Emmett G. Sullivan. He has the authority, the tools, and the obligation to assess the credibility of the department's stated reasons for abruptly reversing course. The department's motion to dismiss the Flynn case is actually just a request, one that requires leave of the court before it's effective. The executive branch has unreviewable authority to decide whether to prosecute a case, but once it secures an indictment, the proceedings necessarily involve the judicial branch, and the law provides that the court, not the executive branch, decides whether an indictment may be dismissed. The responsible exercise of that authority is particularly important here, where a defendant's plea of guilty has already been accepted. Government motions to dismiss at this stage are virtually unheard of. Well, yesterday, Judge Emmett Sullivan appointed retired U.S. District Judge for the Eastern District of New York, I said Southern earlier, it's Eastern, John Gleason, specifically to represent those who would argue against dismissing the Flynn prosecution. So he's going to, this judge who wrote those things in the Washington Post, this judge is going to have an actual role in the determination of whether to let Attorney General William Barr, also known as Rollo Tomasi from L.A. Confidential, to get away with it. And one may hope that Judge Gleason walks in there with the intent of nailing some amphibian frog hide to the wall.
Yeah, and maybe Pepe won't be so chipper. Pepe. Anyway, thank God, and I understand why now you said that corner, a little glimmer of hope. Because, you know, a lot of retired judges, what was it, like 2,000 people responded?
Yeah. And remember, see, this is why I think it will be important to compel Attorney General Pepe the Frog to appear in person before Judge Sullivan.
Yes.
Because he's quite obviously the person who made this call. This call does not get made by an underling without approval all the way to the top.
See, he didn't maneuver as well as he thought he did. Yes, right. And I think that maybe Pepe, that's what I'm going to call him now, Pepe, because honestly, guy, he's looking froggier every day now that I think about it. Damn. But remember, Judge Sullivan was so incensed by some of the classified information he saw about Flynn that he was just about speechless. Do you remember that?
Yeah. He was wrought.
He was wrought. He almost broke. He broke. I don't know what it's called, protocol, but he did, you know, in other words, he left his statism and he got a little emotional, but that's because he saw what he saw. And, you know, I think that the for-profit media, and amidst all this nonsense, because I was listening to C-SPAN today, and I was able to do that while I was working. I was so thankful. I could listen to Bright and everything else. Man, oh my God, there's some shit coming out. But, what Flint, all right, this is what's being lost. They talk about perjury and this and that, but just break it down. People are busy. Flynn lied about contacts with Kislyak, who is a Russian diplomat. And just because if folks don't understand what a diplomat is, it is a soft core spy. Everybody has them, and so you just wink and nod. But it's a soft core spy. That's what a diplomat is. Except maybe he wasn't that soft core because of, you know, who he works for. So back up. Why are you lying about contacts with a Russian quasi spy, which is, you know, really a spy? Because let's think about what else is going on. We don't hear shit about Butina or Butina, whatever you want to call her. Because she was only aligned with an organization that's only aligned with one party. So that's another part of this. But we don't hear shit about that. That's a big part of this, in my opinion. I mean, if you dig deep enough.
Right. And as Shorty points out, true, Todd, remember the judge said the word treason to Flynn's face.
To his face.
And Darlene points out there's legal precedent for what Judge Emmett Sullivan did, asking Gleason to do a separate investigation. It's also, and I hadn't thought about this, this is interesting. It's also reminiscent of what Bill Barr did with John Durham. Parallels here? Go ahead, Bill Pelham Barr. Try to find fault with that. I'm telling you, I think Emmett can get Bill Pelham Barr to appear in front of him. I think there's no question. If an Article III federal judge, you know, the flowing robes, the majesty, issues a rule to show cause, and summons Bill Pepe the Frog Barr before his bar, and Bill says fuck off, then you get a rule to show cause for contempt. At which point there's a very real possibility that the Attorney General of the United States will go behind the iron.
Hmm.
Bill Barr thought he was being cute by coming up with a way to absolve Michael Flynn without making Donald Trump issue a pardon to him during an election year. But it's blowing it right now. There's a potential for it to blow up in his face in a bad and ugly way.
Bob, I'm seeing these visions of Barr trying to answer questions, and he's even going to have to tell the truth or plead the fifth.
No, the vision I have is of him with the tin cup behind the bars, raking it back and forth across the bars, yelling, "You lousy screws!"
Alternative classic movie style in black and white.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
It's disgusting. Let me ask you one question about a movie. How is it that they have called all, or at least...
With any luck at all, frontiering will end tomorrow.
You're kidding.
I've got a different connection coming in here. I hope
you've got a new relationship.
Yes. That's exactly what it is, a new relationship. But we frontiered twice tonight.
You pay too much money for that, man. That's what I'm talking.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
You know, once again, America's an illusion. Now South Korea, they don't want you to know how fast their shit is. Their shit is, even fucking peasant, they got faster shit than we do. And they don't even have a fish to piss on. You know, I have to ask you this now, because I've been watching Turner, man. I'm getting older now. I have some gray hairs, and I didn't know I liked these old movies as much as I do. That Turner is the shit. So, have you seen The Heart is a Lonely Hunter? Alan Arkin.
Oh, hell yes.
Damn, man. That shit made me cry. That movie. Oh, my God. It's so real. Oh. I'm sorry.
No, it's a magnificent film. And by the way, Ralphs is pointing out that with the Supreme Court, and this just tells you almost everything you need to know. Stop telling us what we need to know, Bob. Ralphs just sent the link along. I'd seen references to this earlier. As soon as those maggots in the Wisconsin Supreme Court had issued their death warrant for Wisconsinians, Wisconsinian, probably maggots, poured out of their homes like cockroaches from behind the baseboards. And bars all over Wisconsin were jam-packed with people standing shoulder to shoulder, asshole to navel, and LARPing and smollicking and a drinking together because they was finally free.
You know, two things. That's going to be an interesting experiment to watch, and it's so sad it's real. And it's so sad we're living through this Michael Crichton, Tom Clancy novel that is our life. And the other thing is that you are now world famous for your LARPing and schmarlicking.
Yeah, LARPing and smollicking, absolutely.
Smollicking. Well, okay. And don't forget, tomorrow is Fish and Grits Friday. So remember, everybody, get your fish and grits on.
Oh, yummy. I'd love me some fish and grits. And one of these days, you still have to make the tartar sauce.
Oh, I did that. I had
with the ground cabbage.
All of it. I guess I did because I bought fish and I was like, shoot, I have to do this. I got all the ingredients.
Nothing like it.
And nothing like it. And you can't go back really.
This is special. I just got a note from Suman out in Arizona. Subject line: protests in Phoenix. The maggots need actors. And it's a literal Craigslist ad from Phoenix. Actors needed, Phoenix Convention Center. Actors help needed for event tomorrow, 2 to 11 p.m., $15 an hour. Duties include protest activity and holding signs that are pro-Trump. Minorities welcome and needed. Looking to fill about 500 spots.
Oh, my God. What? That's disgusting.
Yeah. Flavio, of course, is in Wisconsin. And I'm not making light of this. I mean, it was disgusting what I saw about people running out to the... Yeah, who doesn't want to sit down in a bar and have a beer? Sure, why not?
But, especially, you know, Wisconsin has really good local craft beer.
Oh,
really
quit it. No, to sit down and drink an ice-cold Spotted Cow from New Glarus Brewing in a minute. But I'm not going to die for it. And so Flavio says people are going to die. We're going to see people dropping like flies in Wisconsin because of what those goons...
Scott Walker.
Well,
just stop with the news.
What? No, because, I mean... stop being so sensitive. It's not like they had an African-American Barbie. It was just a naked white girl brunette Barbie meant to stand in for Governor Gretchen Whitmer because she hates freedom. Stop making everything about all that. It's okay to use nooses on little naked white brunette Barbies.
You know, and any body shame the woman. You know.
What's the body shame?
That's what I'm saying. That girl, she, you know, I think she's pretty daggone good looking. I mean, not that it matters, but, you know, she's not, you know, come on. It's that, you know, nice looking lady. Come on. These people are ridiculous. I'm head on mind. I don't know what to call it. You know, widget, gadget, whatever. It's been hot, but then when you switched over, it was really, really hot. Like, it's coming through. So anybody who listens to the program, just go to Head On Live. That's the best way. It's fast. It's boom. It's up. I mean, just don't go to TuneIn. I mean, you can. TuneIn's great.
The best place to get the stream is always HeadOn.live.
It is. And,
well, I guess, well, Todd, I guess we're going to wrap up because apparently shit's gone completely sideways with the audio chain. Don't know why, but Brother Deacon Asa says audio's gone all weird, robotic. Darlene, tell me about it. Robert in Australia says Verizon is sending you off in style. Dropping out, breaking up, sounds like a shortwave station during a thunderstorm. Oh, that's just beautiful.
Okay.
Maybe the podcast will be better. I need to send thanks to Janie. Janie got us down to only $45 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Thank you so much, Janie. I hope you can hear this. Thank you so very much. Golly Moses, we've covered a lot of ground tonight. And Ralph says, yeah, you're going in and out every half minute or so. Well, Frontier, God knows, Frontier.
I noticed it on this end also. They wouldn't do the right thing. We should all have fiber optic. I don't understand. That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, you're doing a great job, man.
Frontier Fiber is 300 feet from where I'm sitting right now, and they will
not. I'll never forget when you said that. That's why I brought it. I was like, man, let's go out to the pole. Well, come on, I'll help you, man. Come on.
Let's get some duct tape and a staple gun and yeah.
Jesus. Stretch it out, man. Get it. They won't see it. Well. Anyway,
Brother Deacon Asa says it's all straightened out now. Go figure. Well, the audio file will be a mess this evening, but we didn't even know what to call it. I didn't even know what to call it when I started the program because I called yesterday. Thorn in the side Thursday. So this will be thorn, like Ralph said, this will be thorn and a half. Sheesh. Todd, you take care of yourself, my friend.
You too, my friend.
All right, later now. And that's our buddy Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Sorry for the audio problems. As Shorty said, the stream sounds creepy. The loop's not your fault. I'm trying some different things audio-wise, trying to make things a little bit simpler here. And hopefully with the new service, things will get a little bit better at the very least. And had a note from Russell from Delaware. Russell said, our dear leader is determined to either win re-election or burn this country down. After that, he will flee to his gaudy condo in his tacky Trump Tower, Moscow. Don't think for a minute that that isn't still an inducement for him to continue doing as he is told. What a time to be alive, you know? What a time. Let me check in here. Just check Twitter real quick. Yeah, Eileen in New York pointed out nonstop frontiering. I appreciate that, Eileen. Maybe after tomorrow it all goes away. We can at least cross our fingers and hope. And thanks to Jeremy and Janie again for jumping in on fundraising this evening. That means tomorrow, Friday on the front porch, we'll have $245 to finish the week. Thank you so much. We're paying bills and trying to keep the thing on the air for all we're worth. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Remember, Malloy comes your way at 9 p.m. on the HeadOn.live stream. By all means, wash your hands, don't touch your face, stay socially distant, wear your mask, and avoid maggots as though they are the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.